Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
So let's get the preview on the Florida Gators from Graham Hall. Covers the Gators for Swamp 24/7 down there in Gainesville. And Graham, last week we previewed Texas. We do our opponent previews back to front so that when we finish, we're at the start of the season. So we did Texas last week, and I was all happy, lovey-dovey with those guys, telling them, I think you had a chance to be undefeated, be SEC champs. It's not going to be the same today. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you with Florida. I am a lot lower on Florida than I feel like a lot of people around me are. So give me a 30-second elevator pitch on why this Florida Gator team is not only going to be above my expectations, but could even end up having what would be considered a good season.
Well, I think that they've shored up a lot of issues on their team, starting with the defense, adding some talent there in the secondary, particularly the safety spot, adding Asa Turner, DJ Douglas, Triquez Bridges, getting Jordan Castell back for his sophomore year after an impressive freshman season. Devin Moore, fully healthy as well, should help at cornerback. That's going to be huge for Florida, which struggled to stop these explosive offenses in the SEC last year. And then getting Graham Mertz back for his second year, first time Billy Napier has had a returning starting quarterback at Florida. I know we're just only going into year three here, but getting him back should lead to some continuity with the offense. And he was impressive last year. He was just shy before that injury of setting a top 10 single season passing record in Florida program history, really cut down on his turnovers last year. Just three interceptions, and all of them were, I think, deflected off of his receiver's hands. So you look at that, and then you factor in the more competitive depth in multiple spots, linebacker, defensive line improving, getting some talented wide receivers, Elijah Badger as well. This should be a team that takes a step forward. And if they do have injuries, which is the case with every single team, as you mentioned Texas now dealing with C.J. Baxter being out for the season, Florida losing Montrell Johnson for a little bit of time here with a week-to-week injury with that knee injury. Having a more competitive depth should allow Florida to avoid a huge drop-off when that injury bug does strike. So across the board, more talent, some continuity, some coaching changes they think are going to help. It's just that schedule that you look at and wonder, how are they going to navigate this absolute beast of a slate?
Florida last year, I thought Graham Mertz was one of the most surprising players, maybe in college football. You saw what he had done at Wisconsin, and I just didn't have him being one of the top quarterbacks in the country on my bingo card last year. But he was. He was really, really good for the Gators. Then the Gators go out and sign the nation's number one high school quarterback in DJ Lagway. I do a radio show with Richard Cross, who does games for ESPN. He did the Florida spring game, and when he came back from that, he was like, man, that kid, he can play. And in this day and age of college football, five stars don't show up and expect to – the days of just redshirting and developing are kind of over. What's the plan at Florida to balance those two guys who I think can both be successful?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question and one that kind of, I think, remains to be seen here. DJ Lagway needs to continue progressing. I think the raw physical talent is evident. He's fine-tuned his mechanics. His footwork has improved. His understanding of the offense has progressed. Getting here in spring camp is obviously going to help him. But you have a guy back in Graham Mertz who is the de facto leader of this team, no doubt about it whatsoever. A six-year guy who, as you mentioned, was impressive, was the most accurate quarterback returning to the SEC, completed nearly 73% of his passes last year. How do they balance that? I think that if you have both quarterbacks, it makes you a lot more difficult to prepare for, right? Because they have two very different skill sets. DJ Lagway, a guy who is not afraid to use his legs, has a very powerful arm, maybe can throw even farther downfield than Graham Mertz can. But then you have a guy in Mertz who just knows the system. You can trust him. I think if you're a little bit at a higher rate, if you're Billy Napier, how do they balance that? I would not be surprised, and I'm not saying that DJ Lagway is Tim Tebow, so before anyone runs with that, I got to pump the brakes there right now. Don't put those type of expectations on anyone right now, because you'll crumble under the pressure if you're being called Tim Tebow in a sense here. But I do think, just similar to the way that Florida in 2006 used Tim Tebow and Chris Leak, where Tim Tebow came in some goal line situations, gave you a different look, allowed you to run some of that wildcat, that the spread offense that Urban Meyer really just was so successful with in Gainesville, that is what I think is going to be DJ Lagway's role. Make it more difficult for the defense to have to prepare for two quarterbacks. Keep them guessing at times, knowing that you could trade one in and one out. The big question for me, and I really am surprised that I don't see this too much being discussed right now is how are you going to handle the quarterback switching with the in-game helmet communication aspect that we're going to see in college football this year. They would have to coordinate having, you know, guys ready to go in who have that earpiece in, and you can't have, I think, more than two guys on the field at the same time with it, or it's going to be a penalty, something else the teams are going to have to navigate this year. Maybe that's an element that makes you, as a head coach, when you're a team like Florida that has a very small margin of error based on the schedule and based on what happened to you last year, maybe that makes you hesitate a little bit. But I'm with you. I think that his talent is simply too much for Florida to sideline him, especially in this day and age with NIL and worrying about the transfer portal and guys have an opportunity to go elsewhere if they don't like their role. All of these factors makes it really hard for me to see DJ Lagway not playing a role this season. I just don't know if it's going to be very significant. I think he'll be able to help Florida's offense, but I think it'll be in a very complimentary fashion, giving them some different looks and forcing the defense on a week-to-week basis to have to prepare for the possibility of two quarterbacks, even if Graham Mertz goes out there and takes 90 to 95% of the snaps.
You mentioned the injury to Montrell Johnson. Of course, Trevor Etienne now at Georgia. The Florida backfield, just not a lot of experience there. Is there talent? Who's going to have to carry the ball for them? And what do we really know about Johnson and how long he'll be out?
I think that for Montrell Johnson, a lot of it remains to be seen. You know, Billy Napier said today that they're going to go at his timeline. They're not going to rush this guy back, as durable as he has been. You don't obviously want to re-aggravate it, but, you know, Billy Napier called it a very minor injury, one that they're going to be cautious with. He's out there in pads at practice. He's on both feet. This isn't something that is going to cause him to miss a significant duration of the season, but could I see him potentially missing that first game of the year against Miami? Absolutely. I mean, and maybe even they choose to rest him for another week, knowing that they have Samford in week two before starting SEC play. That would make a lot of sense to me, not rushing the guy back, knowing that he did have to get that knee scoped out a little bit. But you mentioned the talent behind him. A lot of potential, but not much experience. The most experienced guy is Treyon Webb, a sophomore who had, what, 150 yards on the ground last year, two touchdowns. He was the third back on the roster behind Etienne, who's at Georgia, like you mentioned, and Johnson, who's been Florida's leading rusher the past 2 years. Treyon Webb is going to have to carry the load here for Florida. And if you look at Billy Napier's offenses historically during his coaching career, I mean, this is the guy who is intent on running the football, no matter who he has back there. You know, he runs the ball about 60% of the time. So I do think that they're going to have to rely on Webb against the Hurricanes, whether the Johnson's back or not, at a high rate this early on in the season, especially. And then you look behind him. I mean, Jaden Ball was fantastic in the spring game as well, a very promising freshman, just like DJ Lagway. Katie Daniels was good as well. That's two freshmen, though, that are going to have to, I think, play early on this season, because you're not going to see just one back get the lion's share of the carries. They're going to take a by-committee approach. They're not going to change their approach too much, even though Johnson, his availability for the next coming weeks remains to be seen.
And we know a thing or two about Katie Daniels up here in this neck of the woods. That's a really, really good football player that's in Gainesville right now. Mississippi State was not happy to miss out on him as part of their signing class a season ago. With this Gator schedule, I mean, it's almost to the point where it's a meme, right? We just keep talking about it, and we talk so much about the back end of the schedule, as we should, right? After the second bye, Georgia at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss at Florida State. Very, very tough, obviously. The beginning of the season, Miami, then you mentioned the Samford game, Texas A&M at home, and then you got to go to Mississippi State. I think a fast start is possible for the Gators, but also a really bad start is possible for the Gators. How do you see the Gators in the first month of the season? Do you think they get off to a fast start, or do they stumble coming out of the gate?
That's the huge question for me, because that intangible of momentum, you know, especially the first week, what it's going to do for setting narratives when it comes to Billy Napier and Mario Cristobal, and kind of validating all this positivity that you've heard from the program in Gainesville in the last 7 months, that's going to be huge for them, a huge 60 minutes of football in that game. Then Texas A&M, a team with a new head coach, what does their offense look like? They get Connor Wegman back, but that defense is going to be one of the best in the SEC in my mind. You know, getting Shamar Turner back as well, you know, that is going to be a very, very talented group. You can't say that's a guaranteed win in any way, even though, you know, you're going to get that home field advantage. And then Kentucky as well, you know, Mark Stoops, the most tenured coach in the SEC now, been in Lexington for 12 years.
Crazy to think that, but
it is, right. You know, but that with Nick Saban hanging it up and putting on the ESPN jersey now, I think that you really, you know, look at what Stoops has done. I've always been a fan of the way he's recruited, the way his staff is evaluated, and he may have two of the best defensive players in the SEC, if not the entire country, in defensive lineman Deion Walker and Maxwell Harrison there at cornerback. I mean, he may be the SEC's best corner, if not their best secondary player. I know guys like Malachi Starks may have an argument there as well, but, you know, what is their offense going to look like? They have former five-star quarterback Brock Vandegrift, who transferred from Georgia. You have Chip Traynham, who came on over from Ohio State. They've obviously added some talent there at wideout as well. I mean, that's a team that beat Florida last year. You can't sleep on them. The big one, though, and this is another one for bragging rights, where I'm very intrigued how this game is going to go, especially for Billy Napier's tenure here in Gainesville, is that October 5th matchup against UCF. I mean, look at UCF's schedule. I'm not saying they're playing a whole bunch of cupcakes, because Big 12 play is interesting. They got to go to Iowa State, play BYU, play Arizona and Arizona State back-to-back weeks. But that first couple games of the year for the Knights is extremely winnable. They could come into Gainesville undefeated with KJ Jefferson at quarterback, a guy who beat Florida last year on senior night, right? Albeit against a defense that was very beat up. But they also have one of the nation's best running backs in RJ Harvey. They added Penny Boone from Toledo as well. I mean, this is a really good team. The defense is absolutely the question in my mind when it comes to UCF, as well as how well they're going to be able to protect Jefferson and carve out holes for the run game there along the offensive line. But that is going to be a game that I could see being extremely close here in Gainesville. So, you know, that's the early slate for Florida to pick up some wins. If they can't manage to do that before they get into November, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are writing Billy Napier's obituary at Florida and starting to say this guy's tenure is coming to an end. They better get some wins early on before they face that daunting five-game stretch against, like you mentioned, Georgia, LSU, FSU, Texas. I mean, you know, Ole Miss is going to be here on senior night. That is going to be absolutely grueling. If they can win one of those games, I think a lot of people would be impressed. So they absolutely better win some in the first seven, or else it's hard for me to see, you know, them stick by Billy Napier. As much as I think that he is an impressive person and has built the Florida program back to be competitive and that this team is better, that schedule is unforgiving. It is relentless. You better pick up your wins when you have a chance to. You better not shoot yourselves in the foot, which we did see some last year from the Gators. They better avoid those issues, and they better find wins when they can get them, because they may be hard to come by as the year goes on.
I love KJ Jefferson and the Gus Malzahn offense. I think it's just an absolute perfect fit. I agree with you. Central Florida is a team that's very interesting in this one. One last one. We'll make it a lighthearted question. Yesterday, the announcement from Florida International, Pitbull Stadium is coming there. If Florida were to have a celebrity field named, who is the Gators celebrity?
I guess it'd be Tom Petty, right? I mean, you're already playing a song there in the third quarter. I know some people would maybe like it to be a former Gator in a sense here. You know, Tim Tebow Stadium, Steve Spurrier Stadium would be fantastic as well. But
they don't have the money, though. We got to get some money into the program.
We got to get some money. You know, Tom Petty's family owns a ton of that music rights. You've seen a lot of artists recently sell off their music rights. Imagine they sell the rights to Tom Petty's catalog and use that to reach out and establish his legacy in other means and have Tom Petty Stadium named after him. That'd be pretty cool. Pitbull opened the door. What a, you know, changed the game in a sense here, man. Took the Big 12's money and put it in Florida International.
There you go.
And it's opened the game for music artists to be taking over. And when it comes to naming rights, I think it's absolutely fascinating. That would make the most sense to me. You know, if not, it's going to be something boring, like whoever the founder of NVIDIA is, you know, the UF grad, someone with a ton of money. So it definitely appeals to, you know, demographics, especially younger demographics, to have a notable name so you could go there. Man, if only Taylor Swift went to University of Florida, that'd be the obvious one for me. I mean, I don't know if Less Than Jake Stadium or Against Me Stadium. I don't know if anyone knows who those acts are. Some Gainesville acts, you know, Fueled by Ramen Stadium, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if that has the same ring to it, but If I had to guess one right now, I'd go with Tom Petty Stadium. But I also think Gatorade Stadium would be pretty awesome, man. I got to be honest. I mean, Gatorade Stadium, Gatorade may be more well-known on an international level than the Florida Gators, University of Florida. That would appeal to potentially an even larger demographic than the Gators, be internationally recognizable. That would be very sick in my mind. I just don't know if we're going to see it. Before we're going to see that, before we see the University of Florida Stadium renamed, we are going to see in the next couple of years, potentially even this season, you're going to start seeing, you know, fields with the field logos. That is coming up here pretty soon. You know, Arkansas definitely going to get Tyson and Walmart on their field here coming up. You know, Ohio State been ahead of the curve with Safe Light field logos on there. Mm-hmm. Teams are selling these from what I've heard. They're asking for, you know, a 5-6 year commitment, multi-year commitment, and they're asking for 7 figures in some cases to put these field logos down there. And then after that, we're going to get jersey patches. So that's probably more in the pipeline here coming up in Florida going Gatorade Stadium.
I didn't think we were going to get a less than Jake reference on the show today, but you proved me wrong. So there we go.
we'd have all the great falling apart headlines, you know.
Yeah.
The anthem for Florida, you know. Gosh. But it's Gainesville Rock City. It'd be great as well. Big Less Than Jake fan. Give me some ska back in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Rename it. I'm all for it.
There you go. Graham Hall, Swamp 24/7, man. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Always my pleasure. Y'all take care of there.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.